guys, we're gonna get started. So we believe everybody has forgotten what this class is because nobody has done the last homework. So if you remember last time we were discussing the Java database connection. So you, however, I decided that it would be better to finish the discussion of JDBC and other databases at the end of the semester, because by that time we will have installed some actual software on which we can demonstrate which uses it properly. So we're going to postpone advanced databases to the end of the semester, and as you haven't done anything on the elementary databases, that won't bother you. So we're going to return actually to the most elementary technology, which is Perl. So there are three handouts. There is the JDBC handout, there is a general database handout on SQL, and there is a Perl handout. So everybody should have, students who can't count up to three should leave, sorry, that's one, yeah? So you should all have three handouts. They're sitting over in those boxes over there. All right, so we're going to start off Perl today. So some of you may know Perl, so you can leave. So Perl has two famous books. One is called Learning Perl, and it's called the Llama Book, for obvious reasons. Another book is called Programming Perl, which is called the Camel Book, for obvious reasons. Now, there are two versions of Perl. What you have a handout for is Perl 4, which was upgraded to Perl 5 a couple of years ago. And in fact, I would always recommend you use Perl 5. I think if you have the standard MPAC, Perl is always Perl 5. So we will first do Perl 4 with a few hints as to what's in Perl 5, and then we will go through the extensions in Perl 5. All right. So one advantage of Perl 4 is that this book here, Learning Perl, describes Perl 4. It does not describe anything in Perl 5. And this is a truly excellent book, because it's actually a finite size, and it's not 1,000 pages long, and it's very readable. And these foils here are linked to this book. Essentially every foil in this set tells you which chapter of this book is described. So this book here is much harder to read. It's more a manual than a learning book. However, the author of this book, the lead author, is Larry Wall, who is actually the inventor of Perl. He used to be a systems programmer at the Jet Propulsion Lab many years ago, and he invented Perl to solve a problem JPL gave him. He now actually works for the publisher of this book, O'Reilly, who published a lot of other books. And it is I gather that O'Reilly is expected to come out with a supported version of Perl. So So before I begin on the details, let me just discuss a few more overall issues in Perl. So as I think I mentioned when I discussed Java and Java, well, especially JavaScript, Perl is an older language. It is an interpreter like JavaScript. It has many features that are better than Java and JavaScript, especially when processing documents and dealing with systems, especially Unix systems. So Perl was designed around Unix systems programming. However, Perl does run on other systems. In particular, it runs on Windows NT and Windows 95. And O'Reilly, I gather, is working on a supported version of Perl for the Windows environment. So I would expect Perl to become easier to use on Windows. I don't think there are many people in MPAC who have much experience on Perl with Windows, but there are only a few places where the language would need, has some, it's not entirely clear on how it would run on Windows. But there are, Perl is essentially all free, everything. You do not currently pay for any of the Perl software, and you can download Perl 5 for Unix systems or Windows. Okay. So, Perl as a language is very like C. If we come think about Perl 5 is C++, if you like, as opposed to Perl 4 being C. Perl includes everything that the Unix shell can do. I must admit, I find the Unix shell impossible to use. I can never remember what its cryptic commands do. So Perl, in my opinion, is strikingly easier to use than the Unix shell. It has the capabilities of C, the capabilities of the shell, the capability of the stream editor sed, and the capabilities of the pattern matching system AWK. There's basically a bunch of Unix utilities or previous capabilities linked together. Why it's very powerful is that it's linked together with a real language. So you can do a lot of manipulation with Perl. Alright, so there's some mumbo jumbo. When you write a Perl program, you put this hash sign, exclamation mark, /user/local/bin/Perl. That's what you need to invoke Perl at MPAC. And that just tells the system which version of Perl to use. All Perl files end in .pl. And we've actually already discussed efficiency. There is actually an article I have which describes the relative efficiency of C and Perl. So Perl being an interpreter is much slower than C for arithmetic operations. For a lot of what Perl uses, which is I/O and Unix system commands, Perl is not a lot slower than C for those problems. So you wouldn't use Perl to do your favorite numerical computational fluid dynamics code, but for what it's very good at, which is text processing and general systems programming, it is the interpreted nature is not terribly important, because if you start opening files, then that takes quite a long time anyway. So the fact that you have an interpreter is not very important. And of course, Perl, when it opens a file, calls a C program to actually process the data. So really, Perl is just running C programs. So now, after those general remarks, we'll start discussing the basis of Perl. So this is done in exactly the order of this book. So actually, this file here is slightly incorrect. because although it's not relevant, it claims that numbers are stored as double precision. That's not true. According to this book, they're stored as integers if they can be stored as integers, which means that they're integer, and if they aren't integers, they're stored as double precision floats. So that's not terribly relevant. Perl, like JavaScript, does not distinguish between a string and a number. It has to work out. I mean, you don't in Java, which is a type language, you'll declare a variable to be a character variable or an integer or a float. In Perl, whether it's float, integer, or character variable, you don't tell it. Perl makes a good decision as to what it is. And it's actually somewhat better than Java. It somewhat makes it more intelligently than JavaScript, because JavaScript is even freer format than Perl. So Perl actually makes some distinctions about the operators, which means that I don't think I've ever seen Perl make a mistake in anything I've done as to what the variable type is. So that's that. Alright. So, character strings are very important in Perl. And there are two types of character strings. So this is different from Java or JavaScript. In JavaScript, if you enclose a bunch of characters in single quotes, that's the same thing as enclosing it in double quotes. In Perl, they're very different. And the types of character strings you get in Java and JavaScript are gotten in Perl by putting them in single quotes. The one trouble with these foils is you can't tell sometimes when I'm putting two single quotes together or having a double quote. So these single quoted strings are conventional character strings. And everything inside a single character string is what you think, and the only special characters that appear inside a single character string, single quoted character string, are quote itself, because obviously you better do something about a single quote. And so backslash quote means a real quote, and backslash backslash means a real backslash. So that's a standard convention. Everything else means what it says. It happens to be true that strings are stored in exactly the same way C stores them as a byte stream with a zero byte at the end. Right, so that's pretty straightforward. Now this foil has the wrong title. It should say double quoted strings, because we just finished discussing single quoted strings. Alright, so in double quoted strings, characters have very special meaning. So backslash n means a new line inside a double quoted string. Backslash t is a tab. Actually, I think it's foil 37 has a list which you can browse through to, as you have the skip through to your notes, your foils, foil 37, you will find a list of all these special characters, and they're also given in table 2-1 of this book here. So the example given here is if I put hello world with a new line in it in single quotes, that's the same thing as writing hello backslash n world in double quotes, because the backslash n in the double quotes is replaced by a new line. So one essentially always uses the double quotes with a backslash n for new line, because that's a much more compact and clear way of writing it. If you go to this page 37, there are various, I say, some of the special characters it describes are are things like backslash big L, which says that all the following characters are lowercase. Backslash little L says the next character is lowercase, and backslash capital E ends one of these backslash L's or a backslash U. We will come to the most important feature of double quotes in a little while, because you can actually put variables in double quotes, which is called interpolation. Variables, we'll find out, always, well, scalar variables begin with a dollar, and so dollar is a special character, so if you want a dollar to be a real dollar inside a double quoted string, you have to say backslash dollar. So one of the troubles, of course, with these fancy special characters is you do have to remember what can be a special character, and if you don't want it to be a special character, take some action. So that will be even worse when we come to things called regular expressions. So now we come to scalar variables. So scalar variables are what they are in most languages. They're variables holding a single quantity. That single quantity is a number or a string. And as I said already, there are no types. You cannot define a variable type. The only things there are in Perl are there are types of the following sense. You can have scalars, arrays, associated arrays, or so-called file handles, which are names of I.O. streams, but there are no integer floats and stuff like that. So, somewhat peculiarly, Perl denotes a scalar variable by a dollar. So anything that begins with a dollar is a scalar variable. So dollar Fred is a legal name for a scalar variable. And as it says here, whether that's going to be interpreted as a number or a Hollerith string is determined by how it's used. So Perl is meant to make a sensible decision, which, as I say, I think it always does. So this is a difference, say, from C. In C, you would not use dollar to denote a scalar variable. So apart from that, however, scalar variables are treated just like variables in C, or Fortran, I guess. You just set them with equals, you know, with a traditional equal sign. We also note, as in Java and JavaScript, you end statements with semicolons. As a difference from Java and JavaScript, the comment character is not a slash star or double slash. It's this it's this hash sign. So comments are hashes. I must admit, when I go back and forth between these different languages, I sometimes make mistakes and use a Perl comment in Java or vice versa. So it's unfortunate they can't agree on this convention. So in this example here, it says dollar instructor equals fox. That could be in double quotes or single quotes, because that's just a character string. The semicolon ends the instruction. The hash sign begins a comment, and then you can write what you like. So there are no multiple line comments with this hash sign. If you want the multiple line comment, you just put a hash sign at the beginning of each line. So there's a stray 3 on this foil, so it says, when it says 10 over 3 space 3, I believe it should say 10 over 3. because 10 over 3 is 3.33 we take. So arithmetic is just done as you'd expect, and one difference I've already alluded to in JavaScript is that you do not use a plus sign to add characters together, use the dot. So it says here, hello dot world is hello world, because dot is the concatenation operator or the plus operator for string. So that's one reason why Perl finds it easier to decide whether something should be an integer or a string. It uses a different operator for string. It uses different operators for string variables than it does for numeric variables. I gave you some examples in JavaScript where if you weren't careful, you got the wrong answer, because JavaScript uses the same, uses plus to add numbers and plus to add characters. It has no types, and so when you write 1 plus 1, you can sometimes get 11 and sometimes get 2, depending on how JavaScript interprets it. That can never happen in Perl, because 1 plus 1, where you use the plus symbol, it will always be 2. 1 dot 1, where the ones are numeric strings, will always give you 11. All right. So, somewhat, I must admit I've never used this, but if you want to multiply characters together, use the time symbol, or the cross, the X symbol. So if you wanted to say hip hip hurrah, you could say hip cross 3 dot hurrah. And so again, multiplication of characters is a cross, and multiplications of numbers is as normal a star. So here's not terribly interesting example. So 3 plus 2 cross 3 plus 1 is 3 plus 2 is 5, 3 plus 1 is 4. The cross is character multiplication, so it converts the number 3 plus 2 to the character 5. Multiply 5 four times, so you get 5555. If you used it as a number, it would be the number 5555. If you used it as a string, it would print 5555. So Perl makes presumably good decisions about what things are. All right. So Perl has conventional comparison operators, equal, not equal, less than, greater than, less than or equal to, greater than or equal to. However, again, they're different for numbers and strings. So it uses two equal signs for numbers to test if things are equal. So you just say, if a $A equal equal $B, will test if the numbers $A and $B are equal. And however, if A and B are strings, you're meant to use EQ instead of equal. So you can see what the rule is. I can't read. The rule is that the numerical comparisons actually write, they just use conventional numerical operators. To do string comparisons, you do what you'd expect. You do the obvious string abbreviation for that numerical operator. So equal equal becomes EQ, not equal becomes NE, and so on. Less than becomes LT, etc. So Larry Wall, who was, I gather, trained with a linguistic background, is rather proud of the way he has designed the language in a way that is very mnemonic, so that you can work out what it means. Okay. So you can see that I've forgotten how to do arithmetic, because there's an example at the bottom which says CPS in quotes dotted into 12 times 50, which according to these notes is CPS 616. the normal rules of arithmetic would say it would be CPS 600. But and I believe Pearl, unlike me, Pearl will get his arithmetic right, so it is CPS 600. All right. So, for assignments, they're more or less identical to C, so you can use equal, we've already done that. You can use plus equal, which says add dollar funding plus equals contract is the same as dollar funding equals dollar funding plus dollar contract. So plus equal, that's the same as in C. It just adds the value to the thing on the left-hand side. Now, that's also done for strings, so dot equal means append the characters. So dollar name, so here I said dollar name equals Jeffrey, my first name. Dollar name dot equals Fox would set dollar name to be Jeffrey Fox. So dot equals is essentially append the characters at the end. So that's quite commonly useful. Usually you want to add characters at the end of a string. So you can embed these things. So dollar B equals dollar A plus equals 2 sets dollar B equal to dollar A, in this case equal to 8 if dollar A was originally 6. So you have the plus plus command and the minus minus command, and plus plus can occur before or after a variable. The difference is if you include them, plus plus dollar A is the same as dollar A plus plus unless you do one of these embedding expressions, because plus plus dollar A returns the result after you increment A by 1. Dollar A plus plus increments A by 1 but returns the original value of A. So dollar B equals dollar A plus plus if dollar A is 3, sets dollar B to 3 and dollar A to 4. So I never remember those rules, so I don't use those complicated well, I remember what plus plus is, but I do not remember the difference between before and after. And so, nor do I, as I say here, I never remember what precedence rules is, so I always use lots of parentheses so that it's clear what the rules are. All right. So this is extremely important here. This is very common. So here we're coming back to these double quoted strings. So I told you that in double quotes, backslash n and things like that were interpreted as new lines. But more importantly, if you have a variable in a double quoted string, that variable is replaced by its value. So here we said $h equals world. $HW equals double quote hello space dollar H close another double quote. That dollar H is replaced by its value. So that's called interpolation. So that makes it a lot easier to write complicated character strings. So you can construct in Perl some quite complicated strings which mix variables and text together, and this is a much more elegant way of doing it than the alternative. You could do this in an alternative way as single quote hello space single quote dot dollar H. That would be the same thing. But if you take something with a lot of variables in it, that's much clumsier because you have a lot of dots and quotes beginning and ending. And this mechanism, which just has a single set of double quotes, and you string everything together. And you can put, as we'll see, you can put arrays in there as well. So variable interpolation is a very elegant, I don't say it's elegant, but it's certainly powerful. It's very useful, certainly useful and powerful. So I strongly recommend using that. Points out here these are variables like backslash big U, the capitalized things works on these interpolated variables. And so now we have yet another difference between single quotes and double quotes. If I wrote $H in a single quote, it would be treated as $H, I mean the character dollar followed by the character H. And the and that's why I already mentioned if you have a double quoted string, you'd better replace that, and you want a dollar to be a real dollar, you better use backslash dollar. So, and then it's not interpolated. So the other remark here, this is not done recursively, and it just scans once. So if you have an interpolated variable which has a dollar in it, that dollar is a real dollar and is not further looked at to see if it should be interpolated. All right. So I think that's fine. So this illustrates something which I mentioned before, that Perl is much faster if you write Perl programs, I think you'll find them much faster for processing text documents than Java or JavaScript. And this illustrates one reason why. This is just quicker to write than if you did it with a bunch of function calls as you would in Java or JavaScript. I think as I mentioned, one way to think of Perl is as a domain-specific language optimized as a certain class of activity, and I don't think there's any way, well let's compare it with Java, there's any way a more general language like Java can compete, because Java's trying to be a more powerful general language. So if we come back to the standard use of Perl in so-called CGI scripts, the reason why Perl is still very powerful for CGI scripts is that most CGI scripts are processing documents. Usually they're either reading documents or writing documents, and so this and other Perl capabilities of processing documents make it a very good language to be used for CGI scripts, and if you are just doing document processing, it's probably much faster than Java for doing this. Now JavaScript is also aimed at processing documents, and one of the weaknesses of, but on a, in a different fashion, the client side, and one weakness of JavaScript is it's got nowhere near the capabilities Perl has for manipulating text. No, I think it's useful to get familiar with this and a lot of other special neat features Perl has for processing documents. All right, so we're meant to be able to read stuff in and write stuff out. So as in most Unix systems, Perl has standard input, standard output, and standard error. These are your three standard, well, even Fortran has that. These are your three standard files attached to any running program. And the variable, or it's actually a pointer to a file, or a pointer to the file buffer, a so-called file handle, stdin, all capitalized, is the name of the input file. And stdout is the name of the standard output file, and stderr is the name of the standard error file, the error messages. So it is not required, but it is a rule, it is a convention that you always capitalize the names of file handles. The only rule in Perl is that a file handle, when we haven't actually seen how to create them yet, but you will be able to create them, and it actually is another area where Perl is very powerful. It has very powerful document file opening and closing and manipulation commands. That file handles, the only rule is they do not have a dollar or any special character at the front. They're just ordinary characters. And it's just a convention that they're uppercase. So most Perl programs use uppercase file handles. Okay. All right. So it is extremely easy to read text files in Perl. So Perl is optimized for text files, and so most text files process them a line at a time. So the default operation in Perl, it's a read a line of text into a scalar variable, which then becomes just a character string of all the characters in that line. You do that with the special operator, which is the angle bracket operator. So that's represented here. Dollar line equals less than STDIN greater than. So that's the angle bracket operator with std::in placed in the middle. That reads a line from the file called std::in. And if you had another file called fred, less than fred greater than reads a line from the file called fred. So if you just want to read the next line of a file, you just say dollar line equals angle bracket operator operating on std::in. And although we haven't shown how to use this fact, there is no end of file command in Perl. The end of the file is indicated by nothing being returned, so you just test to see if the dollar line is nothing. If it's nothing, then that's the end of file. Then you can say, what about a blank line? A blank line is a nothing because a blank line has a return character, a new line in it, or a return character. So this dollar line is not the visible characters, it's the visible characters plus the new line. So it is non-zero for any real line in a file, and it's zero at the end of the file. As we'll see, a Perl does not distinguish the number zero from an empty character string. It thinks they're both zero when you do tests. So when testing, it treats the null character string the same as the number zero. All right, so there's a magic operator called chop, which for some reason is changed to chomp in Perl 5. I think maybe it doesn't say. Yeah, it says that here. So chop is replaced by chomp in Perl 5. So you should always use chomp, not chop. There are one or two cases like that where, I guess, for backward compatibility, they kept certain Perl 4 commands but introduced better versions of them with Perl 5 when they gave them slightly different names. What you nearly always do is you say dollar line equals angle brackets of file, that gets you the next line. You then say chomp of dollar line, that removes the new line, and that's usually what you want. You nearly always want to remove the new line. You don't have to, but you nearly always want to. If you want to print dollar line and just reproduce the file, you just say print dollar line. If you just remove the new line and you want this file to look the same as it used to, you better say print dollar line dot open quotes, backslash n, close quotes. And you have to have a new, you have to add back the new line. If you just do a dollar line equals angle bracket operator print dollar line without doing the chomp, you will get out on your output file exactly what you read in. So print without an argument sends the answer to standard output, as you'd expect. In general, print has as its first argument the name of the file that you're outputting to. So these next three foils are pretty trivial. So these, I think, are essentially the same as any as most languages. So you have logical ands, logical ors, logical not. You can also actually, this is easier to read on the foil because I got the colors right. It doesn't come out well in the black and white printout. So and is, you can use the AND OR two AND characters. You can use OR or two vertical bars, and you can use NOT instead of the exclamation mark for NOT. So that's as always. So arithmetic operations, we've essentially seen these already. They do exactly what you'd expect. So that's plus, minus, star, slash, modulus, and par. Right, so the previous logical operations were for Boolean variables. These are for variables which are either true or false. Notice the previous logical operators slightly peculiar because they're operating on variables which may or may not be Boolean because they're just things. And so there's another foil somewhere which tells you that effectively tar will take anything to be true unless it's either the empty character string or the number zero. Empty character string and the number zero are false. Everything else is true. Fred is true, 0.0 is true, but empty characters and zero, the integer zero, just a single zero, are false. So that's Perl's rule for interpreting what to do with logical operations which act on variables. So that actually turns out to be fine, because that is the right rule if the variables were Boolean, and so Perl is extremely proud on always making sensible decisions. So it's the right rule if they are Boolean, and it's as good a rule as any other if they aren't Boolean. So Perl thinks that's a clever idea. So that's why it does not have Boolean variables. Because it thinks it's pretty reasonable to treat 2 and 1 as true, whereas Booleans tend to just say 1 is true and 0 is false. Right, so these are the bitwise logical operations. So these act on the individual bits of the variables, and again they're exactly like any other language as far as I know. So we won't bother to go into that. Into them. So this is more interesting. Alright, so now we get on to the next type of variable. So we're now moving on to chapter 3, I guess, of this book here. So as I mentioned, there are four types of variables. So we've done two types already, scalars, which have dollars, and file handles, which are basically anything without a dollar. So the next type of, there are two types of arrays. Simple arrays and associative arrays. Simple arrays begin with the at sign. Is that what it is? What's this funny thing with a circle with an A in? What? I never remember none of the names of these special characters. Anyway, an array is represented by a name whose first character is the at sign. So $Fred is a scalar, @Fred is an array, %Fred is what will turn out to be an associative array. And that's just life. May or may not be intuitive, but that's the rule. And an array is identical to a list, essentially. Or at least lists are a special case of an array, because you can have arrays with missing entries. I guess you can have lists with missing entries. So arrays and lists are the same thing. If you want to create an array, you just set it equal to a list. A list starts with a parenthesis, has a bunch of entries, scalars, separated by commas, and then it has a closed parenthesis. So parentheses are important because they create lists. And that will turn out to be important in some of the more advanced Perl concepts in this issue of context. Because remember, Perl always makes a decision. So even when it doesn't look about what the type of thing is, so by enclosing something in parentheses, you always convert it into a list, which means you convert it into an array. So sometimes you need to remember that, because otherwise there's sometimes when it's unclear whether something's a scalar or an array. And if you find parentheses lying around in Perl when they don't seem to be necessary, it is sometimes to make certain that what's created is a list or an array. Okay. But anyway, this is straightforward here. Here we create a nice list, which is called @Fred. The first entry of @Fred is 1. The second entry is in quotes, second entry, and $HW is the third entry in the array Fred. So notice that that's quite there's an interesting feature which is typical of an interpreter, namely, when you use Fred, you get the most up-to-date value for this particular definition of Fred. When you access the third element of Fred, you get the latest value of $HW, or the scalar variable. So this list assignment does not set the third element of Fred to be the current value of $HW. It sets it equal to the scalar variable $HW, which is then carefully calculated with its current value whenever it's used. So this is sort of an active element. So if you'd have to calculate its value with the eval command or something if you wanted the actual value of $HW for, you'd have to write the third element of Fred equals $HW. That would set you to the current value of $HW. But this definition of list gives you the value when you use the entry Fred. Okay. So this points out here that Excel spreadsheets have the same feature. When you assign functions in Excel spreadsheets, they have that same type of property. So here's some commands which I must admit, some of these I don't use. So there is a dot operator. So if you wanted to, here's an example where you wanted to create the list 1, 2, 3, 4, we can write @Fred equals parentheses 1, dot, dot, 4, close parentheses. So the dot, dot starts with the thing in front of the dot, dot, ends with the thing at the end of the dot dot, and just gives you a nice list incremented by 1. And you can have variables at the beginning and the end of that dot dot instead of numbers. And you can mix it all up. So here is back thread, $3, $8, $$B. So that only makes much sense if $A and $B are integers. Then you get a list, which will actually have a variable number of entries, because it will use the current values of $A and $B and just generate when it's used the list of numbers from $A through $B. So there's some quite interesting ways of using the equal sign with arrays. So at Fred equals at Jeff creates a second array equal to the first array, so that's what you'd expect. Although you can't do that in Fortran. You can do it in Fortran 90, but not in Fortran 77. If you wanted to create a more complicated list, you could say at Fred equals 4, 5, at Jeff. That makes a list with two more entries than Jeff, which are 4 and 5 at the beginning. So here's a pretty peculiar one here. So this shows you the equal sign's rather complicated. So here we have $A, at Fred equals at Fred. So what does that mean? Well, thing on the left-hand side is in parentheses. So it's a list. The first entry is $A, and the second part of the list is the array at Fred. So there's only one thing this could mean is that it says take the current array at Fred, that's the thing on the right hand side, take the first element and stick it in $A, which is a scalar, remember $A is a scalar, and then it says take at Fred, you must remove the first entry because otherwise you couldn't have it be equal, so at Fred gets its first element removed and a new list, and just fill a list, it's got the first element removed, and $A is that old first element. So that says these list operations do what you'd expect. And you can have the operation essentially defined by what's on the left-hand side as well as what's on the right-hand side. So here's an even simpler example, $A, $B, $C equals a list on the right-hand side, 1, 2, 3. That's what you'd expect. $A is set to 1, $B to 2, $C to 3. Here's something you have to remember. It's a little confusing. You might have thought the function length returned the length of the array. Unfortunately, it doesn't. Length returns the number of characters in a scalar variable. So when you write $A equals length of at Fred, so it says, well, this person has used an array for a function length which takes a scalar as an argument, so we'll do the best we can, we'll just take the first element of Fred, because that's at least a scalar. So it then takes the first element of Fred, and then it assumes that the first element of Fred is a character string, and it tells you how many characters it has in it. So that's probably not what you wanted. Well, if you wanted the number of elements in the array, it wasn't what you wanted. So the way you find the number of elements in the array, you just set a scalar variable equal to the array. So $A equals at Fred, just set $A to be the length of the array Fred. You just have to remember that. Just life. So here's an example which illustrates again the power of parentheses. You might have thought $A equals at Fred was the same thing as $A in parentheses equals at Fred, but that's not true, because $A in parentheses defines a list. You set it equal to at Fred. So here we have a list with one variable, equal to another list with more than one entry, so it does the best it can. So if you write $A in parentheses equals at thread, it says $A equal to the first entry in thread, not to the length of thread. So only get the length of thread when you write a scalar variable equal to an array variable. So now here's something very important. It's not terribly useful, but it is true that $thread and @thread are totally distinct objects. Namely, they are separate entries in the symbol table, if you like. They have no connection with each other. So you can do whatever you like with @thread, and you can do something totally independent with another, with a different scalar variable called $thread. However, there is something to do with dollars in it, which has got to do with @thread, and that's $thread of an index in square brackets. So $thread, open square brackets, 0, close square brackets, is the first element of the array @thread. So let's see why that's sort of reasonable. An element of an array is a scalar, by definition. So scalars have to begin with dollars. So @thread is an array. Any element of thread is $thread. And you better decide which element it is. So it's $thread of an index. So that actually says why I sometimes forget that arrays begin with @signs. Although you can write programs with lots of arrays in them, you can actually do it in a way that you usually use the elements, not the arrays, which you always use, and use dollars there, not the @sign. So most of your work with arrays, you do not have to remember, you do not use the @sign, you use the $sign because you're accessing an individual element. So you access an individual, if you want to, $i as an index, you write $thread, open square brackets, $i, close square brackets. That extracts the ith element of the array thread. And of course, the index has to have a dollar in front of it because it's a scalar. So you don't write like you do in C, I, or Fortran. You can't write I, because I is a file handle, if it's anything at all, or a character string. It certainly isn't a scalar variable. When you define your scalar indices and for commands and stuff like that, you'll always have a dollar in front of the name. So $i is the equivalent of I in the simplest possible indexing. All right. Okay, so. So the only other thing it says here is in this interpolation, arrays are interpolated as well as scalar variables. So if I have a double quote, @thread represents the array thread. So if I have a double quote with @thread in it, the pearl will just give you the whole array there. So if I didn't want the whole array, I have to use \@thread. So variable interpolation works for all our variables, whether they be scalars or arrays. So here's some nice Fortran 90-like commands. We've already mentioned the dot-dot syntax. We can make slices by using a square bracket notation. So if I wanted a slice of thread which just had the first had elements 1 through 3, I just write @Jeff equals @thread open square brackets 1 comma 3 close square brackets. So that's just selecting from a list. I forgot to mention, of course, that like C, indices in Perl start at 0, not at 1. And of course, indices can be anything you like. You can use any expressions for an index. So this is, so tall has a special value. This is actually a slight aside. Namely, there is a special variable called undef, which means the variable is undefined. So in most operations, undef behaves like zero or an empty character set. But there are actually there is a pretty useful Perl function called defined. So if you want to test that a particular variable is defined, there is a function called defined. So defined of $A returns true if $A is defined, and zero if $A is not defined. And Perl will propagate the value undef correctly through expressions. And so you can have arrays with missing elements, so you can, and then if you test on a missing element, you will get the value undef as the result, or undefined, which you can find out by this defined function. So here's an example here where I define Fred equals 0, 1, 2, 3. Then if I access $Fred of 6, that will return undefined because I've only defined Fred of 0 through 3. If I set $Fred of 6 equal to 7 and then access $Fred of 4 or 5, you'll get the undefined value as the so this seems to be an error. It says $Fred 4, 5, and 6 is undefined. It's $Fred of 4 and 5 are undefined. So that means you can have sparse arrays, and it's set, and if you access an index which is not defined, it will give you not defined, undefined as the answer. Define was introduced, I gather, in Perl 5. So it's an example of Perl 5 just cleaned up a lot of things in Perl 4. So the argument, the next foil here remarks that the argument of print is a list. So previously we only used print with actually a single entry, which was a scalar essentially, but scalar is a special case of a list. So the general print command takes as an argument a list. And usually what it does is just take the list and just concatenate them together. So actually a print $A dot $B is the same thing as print $A comma $B, because it normally just concatenates. There's actually an option in Perl to put to change the processing of that comma to put anything you like there. But I've never used that. So here's a useful option here. Sometimes when you're reading a file, you want to use the file many times, or the data in the file many times. So the syntax I have, which is dollar line equals anchor operator stood in, that gives me the line. I can then process it, and then I do this in a loop, and I'll get the whole file. But then supposing I want to go back to the beginning, what should I do? Well, I could save the results in an array, but Perl provides a much more convenient way to do it. So we can just write at a file equals angle bracket of stood in, And so that gives me a list or an array called file, of which the first element is the first line of the file, the second element is the second line of the file, and so on. So you can read an entire file into memory, and each line is a separate entry in this array. So that's a good technique to use. Well, as long as the file isn't too big, and you might want to go back and process it, this is a useful thing to do, because now you have everything in that file waiting for you to look at. So that's again typical of Perl. It has lots of nifty little features like this, which make it very convenient for file processing, text processing. Notice this is text processing, because only text files are delimited by new lines. You know, if we had our favorite Fortran program producing some binary output, none of this stuff would be useful. This is only useful for essentially ASCII, you know, standard classic documents. But that's mostly what your that's what Perl's been designed to process. All right, so this is a set of operators, and they're relatively straightforward operators. So remember, arrays are lists. So there's a push operator, which just adds information at the end of an array, a pop operator, which is the inverse operator of the push, which removes the last element of an array and returns the value of that last element. So if you have a list, if you write $A equals pop at a thread, it will put the last element of thread into $A, and it will reduce thread by one in size. So the push and pop operators are useful for either building arrays or for processing in a systematic way, either from the end, the values of an array. So shift and unshift are identical to push and unshift is the same as push, and shift is the same as pop, except they operate at the beginning and not at the end. Which actually, if you think of that file example, that's an example you typically want to start at the beginning, not at the end. So shift. So if I read everything if I read a file into an array at file, $A equals shift at file sets $A to be the current first element in at file, and then removes that first element from the array. So by using shift, in that example, I would work through the entire file, reducing the size of the array by one line each time, and then when I got to the end, of course, I would have processed the entire file. So you'll find shift is very commonly used in Perl programs because it does what you'd expect. It extracts something from a list and removes it from the list, so it's now processed. And it starts at the beginning, which in a lot of operations you want to start at the beginning of a list. In a classic stack, you start at the top of a stack, so that's pushing and popping from a stack. In a list, you start at the beginning, so that's what shift does. Unshift is used less often than shift, because you don't tend to build lists in that fashion. They get built by some other fashion, like this angle bracket operator, but shift is extremely common. It's very, very common to want to be able to do that. So reverse does what you'd expect. It reverses the list. Does it in the opposite order, and sort does what you'd expect. And there's some fancy syntax we'll describe later on for changing the comparison operator in sort so it does what you want. But there's the default must do the standard numeric or alphabetic comparison to do the sorting. So let's do some control structures. So just to be difficult, Perl has some nifty control structures which aren't shared by everybody. So we have if and else, so everybody has an if and an else. But as I told you, Larry Wall is a linguist, so we notice in English we have not only if, but we have unless, which is the opposite of if. So you can write, if something is true, do something else. If it's false, do something else. Unless of an expression will do something if the expression is false. And then the else is what happens if it's true. So there's obviously why you'd want to do that, because sometimes expressions are nearly always true, and in fact you may only want to do them if they're true. So if of something, then you could leave off the else statement. So when you only want to do something when the thing is false, then the unless statement is very useful. But of course it's not true in most languages, because it's obviously unnecessary. You do not need an unless statement. You could put a not in front of it, or you could have an if with an else statement. So unless is undoubtedly redundant, but it can make the code, you can either say it's more readable or more cryptic, because it's certainly going to be shorter if you use the unless statement. Alright, so there's this thing which maybe this is common in some languages, but anyway, the else if is spelled E-L-S I-F, not E-L-S-E-I-F. So else if is spelled as a single five-character symbol. And you can use else if with both if or unless. Right, so this is what I've already told you. To do a test, Perl converts everything to strings, and the string which is zero in quotes, or the null string are evaluated as false, everything else is evaluated as true. So we described that already. Alright, so we have the simplest types of loops are done with while. So the example here I have for while is a very common example. So if I want to read a file until the end of file, I just write while angle operator of std::in. Because how does that work? Well, while does what follows it as long as the argument of while is true. So the argument of the angle bracket operator on std::in is true as long as we read something which was not the empty character string, and we just said that the empty character string is what we get at the end of file. So while angle bracket operator on std::in will loop through the file until we reach an end of file. Typically we would actually not write while std::in, we'd write while dollar line equals std::in, where the std::in is in angle brackets, because that reads std::in, sets it into the Perl scalar dollar line, and it will then do this until we get an end of file. So this is a classic way of reading a file in Perl. You just use the while command, and you just know that Perl returns a false, something which is interpreted as false, if and only if there's an end of file. So, and just again to be elegant or difficult, depending on your point of view, you can use until, which is the opposite of while. So while does something as long as the thing in the bracket is true. Until does in the thing in curly brackets after it, as long as the thing in brackets is false. So the example would be if you were you're waiting for a signal, then the signal would set something to be true. So you say until dollar signal set, and then you do that. Then it will go to sleep or do whatever else you want to do in the until command. Okay. understood an example? Yes, so normally you'd write dollar line equals angle bracket student, and then dollar line is what you process. Now the reason why this works, it turns out the Perl in its great elegance has this default assumption or whatever you were, default syntax, that if you leave out something like dollar line, which you might have expected to put there, the magic variable dollar underbar holds the value. So the most elegant, well, the shortest Perl program for processing, I won't say it's the most elegant, but the shortest will leave out dollar line, and then it will process dollar underbar, because it will know that dollar underbar has the value that was read in by that that angle bracket operator. The reason I never do that for the following reason: although it's true, though it does work, dollar underbar is an overloaded variable, or whatever you want to call it, because dollar underbar is set by all Perl commands where you leave out some default operator. So you can run into trouble, because you might use another Perl operation inside the while loop which also set dollar underbar, and it would overwrite your previous value. But you can, of course, you could set dollar line equals dollar underbar immediately if you wanted to, but then you could have written dollar line equals angle brackets student. So I would only recommend leaving out the dollar line if what you were doing was extremely short, it was totally clear that it wasn't going to be overwritten. Then there is some elegance in leaving it out, because you don't introduce variables which get put on symbol tables and have a bunch of overhead attached to them. So you typically only use the dollar underbar notation when you only need this variable, this defaulted variable, for a small part of the code, which is totally clear that it's not going to be overwritten. But that's, again, typical of Perl. Actually, typical of interpreters. We have a lot of ways of doing things. There are a lot of abbreviations. And it's all designed so that you can get your homework done twice as fast as in Java, if you remember the abbreviations. So. All right, so we will set a homework which will, I think, be set on Wednesday, which will be on Perl. And Nancy McCracken will teach the class on Wednesday, because I'm in Houston. Thank you.